Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Today's episode is thanks to our Patreon members and our affiliates and partners. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to join our membership or donate to the podcast, and stay tuned to hear about some amazing deals and discounts from our partners, including Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, and Jen and Carrie. But for now, we're getting right to the show. Enjoy. Hello, fans and listeners. Welcome back to another episode. It's Lindsay Cortez here, your host of the podcast, owner and sports dietitian at Rise Up Nutrition. I'm here today with a guest, Riley Nichols. He's a counseling and sports psychologist who specializes in working with athletes to address mental health and performance concerns through his private practice, Mind Body Endurance, where in-person and virtual services are provided to support mental health, sports performance, eating, and nutritional concerns for athletes. Dr. Nichols is on ED Care's Scientific Advisory Board and is the Senior Program Advisor for the Athlete Edge at ED Care in Denver, Colorado, where he specializes in intensive eating disorder treatment provided for athletes. Dr. Nichols is listed in the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee Mental Health Registry. He is a certified eating disorder specialist and a certified eating disorder specialist supervisor through the International Association of Eating Disorders Professionals. Dr. Nichols currently serves on the Clinical Advisory Council for the National Eating Disorder Association, NEDA. In addition to competing in endurance sports for over 20 years himself, Dr. Nichols is a running coach and a USA triathlon coach. His proudest accomplishment is being married to his best friend and raising three adorable kids. I'll have to see some pictures of them eventually. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast, Dr. Nichols.
Thanks so much for having me, Lindsay. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Obviously, as I read off your bio, you know, super tons of personal and professional experience in the space of athletes, sports, and then eating disorders as well. And you focusing more so on that mental side. I always like to kind of ask, where did your passion for psychology and sports psychology first stem from? Was it more of a personal journey or just, hey, let me find a career?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think lived experience is probably the short answer. The longer answer is I played sports growing up and baseball kind of was my passion. And I, like any sport, the psychological side of sport was just really relevant and important and just resonated with me. And so had a career ending injury and corresponding shoulder surgery that kind of was a catalyst to exit baseball prematurely in college. So that lived experience and going through that transition out of sport earlier than I would like, in addition to kind of the identity piece with being an athlete and whatnot too, just kind of was a further underscored my desire to support athletes in whatever way I could. So
mm-hmm. Were you studying psychology at the time or more so after your injury that you got into?
Yeah. So actually I was an accounting major for one semester. And after my first accounting class, I exited ship and changed majors. And that kind of coincided with my injury and switched majors to psychology. Yeah. So.
Yeah. You know, I think as you mentioned, all sports have the psychological component. Baseball specifically, I think even just that pressure of, you know, hitting the ball and the three strikes you're out type of, you know, concept and mindset in that type of sport, a lot of psychological implications in that one for sure. But this piece of injury and you dealing with that and then that transition out of sport, this is definitely something that athletes struggle with a lot because it really challenges their identity. Right.
Mm-hmm. It It completely does. And I think there's many factors to it too. I think when athletes are injured, you know, they're kind of extracted from a sport that they hopefully love and enjoy. And sometimes it's their livelihood if they're professional athletes. And there's many layers to this. So without hopefully oversimplifying things, I think there is just some oftentimes kind of a loneliness piece or isolation just from teammates and coaches if you're off doing rehab or whatnot too for your injury. But oftentimes it's like just uncertainty about regaining prior levels of performance post-injury. So that's a common feature of injuries too. And, you know, it's just a huge shift and huge rhythm, I think, that changes sometimes instantly and oftentimes unexpectedly for a lot of athletes undergoing an injury just with routine and how you're spending your time and what you're doing. And I think athletes oftentimes thrive on structure. And sometimes with injuries, there are some structure to like rehab protocols, but sometimes there's just a lot of uncertainty and ambiguity. And that just can be really challenging to navigate and manage both the physical implications of an injury and of course kind of the psychological piece too.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you know, you went through that lived experience yourself and then that further motivated you to study it and kind of get into it as a career as a psychologist. And then you also, as I read off in your bio, your career really shifted then to also getting into working with athletes with eating disorders and a huge psychological component there as well. But kind of, again, where did that kind of shift occur for you?
Yeah. So I knew I wanted to work with athletes. And so I get a master's in sports psychology and I just loved it and ate it up and really resonated with me. And it was the first time kind of in my life where the schoolwork and textbooks didn't really feel like work. It would just felt really wonderful. I look forward to coming to class. And that was great. And I think I was able and equipped to work with athletes for performance issues, just having that training. I also thought in doing that work that more of the underlying or co-occurring clinical issues that athletes experience were really relevant and certainly impact an athlete in a multitude of ways, performance included. So I just felt that having additional, going back to school for additional clinical training would be worthwhile to be more integrative in terms of my framework and how I can conceptualize just athletes in general. And you certainly can't be a one-stop shop for everybody, but I did feel kind of the importance in going back and getting clinical training. And through that, in my doctoral program, you have several years of full year kind of internship or externship placements and practicums. And the first one was in a college counseling center, which was great training. And the second one was in New York City, and it was an outpatient eating disorder clinic that just really spoke to me for a multitude of reasons, that individuals struggling kind of with this illness, of course. And at that time, I was coaching a running group in Central Park and triathletes in the city as well. And just the intersection between the two, kind of with eating disorders and athletes, just seems so, I think, evident. And went back and got a second year of training in my practicum before graduating. And as I was graduating and finishing up my doctoral studies, there was a job posting in St. Louis, Missouri for the Victory program. And they needed someone to come in and kind of oversee it. And it was the first residential eating disorder treatment for athletes in the country at that time. So it was really just fortunate luck, to be honest with you, but just a wonderful timing that I could have planned in terms of all those things kind of intersecting in the ways that they did.
Yeah. And I think I definitely resonate with my own personal career of like, well, I was just working in sport and as a sports dietitian and the prevalence of these sorts of issues around eating is just, it's very prevalent and it's very there and it's very obvious. And it's something that truly needs help, right? So where your skill set as a psychologist and my skill set as a dietitian, like, oh, this can really help this population. It's, you know, it's just there in front of you, right?
Sure. Yep. And it does require oftentimes I can speak for myself in more mental health training. You do get kind of, you know, you learn about eating disorders, but really, unless you seek out kind of additional supervision, training experiences with this population, unfortunately, there's just, you're not going to bolster kind of that specialty or subspecialty. And I think that goes for dietitians as well and physicians as well. So I just think there's such a need for those of us that do work with athletes. Of course, we have athletes struggling in these ways on our caseloads, but also are aware that the specialized kind of training and additional training or placements or practicums and whatnot too are really sometimes few and far between, just having those available.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. And I actually, you know, it's so crazy what I do right now, because I like to be transparent with people. When I was a young dietitian and early in my career, like, the idea of working with eating disorders or disordered eating freaked me out. My mom is always like, I don't know how you do this now, because you literally told me one day I will never do that. But it's because I didn't have the training.
Sure.
Right. And then when you get that, so it is a specialty, absolutely takes specialized training, and because it needs to be done with intention and care and done properly.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of implications of what could go wrong if these sorts of situations are not dealt with qualified professionals.
Yeah, no, I admire that reaction. And I think sometimes that the alligator arms kind of approach of like, I don't want to touch someone with eating disorder treat because that scares me, or I just don't know. I mean, I actually think that's, you know, you don't know what you don't know, but I would much rather have that response and approach without that training, as opposed to being overly confident that I'm equipped and can, because that's a really scary proposition too. Obviously, well-intentioned, but I think yeah.
Yeah. So that was once me, and then I'm good now. But yeah. Well, and going back to your comment about, you know, just, you know, opportunities arose and you got the training and obviously now you're, you know, an expert and a leader in this field. But one of your published research articles cited another article, just so you know. Sundgat, Bergen, and Torvastet, I might not be saying this right, in 2004, just a statistic that the prevalence of eating disorders has been found to be higher in athletes than non-athletes. So where non-athletes hold a lifetime prevalence rate of up to 4.6%, the lifetime prevalence rate of eating disorder among athletes has been shown to be as high as 13.5%. Mm-hmm. And I actually wasn't aware of that statistic until I was preparing for this episode here, that, you know, there, and I guess kind of leading into your research and so that people go look that one up as well. It was called Eating Disorders in Sport, Comparing Eating Disorder Symptomatology in Athletes and Non-Athletes During Intensive Eating Disorder Treatment. I thought this would be a nice conversation to have about, you know, what are some of the symptoms or just like traits that may be different in how an eating disorder is expressed in an athlete versus a non-athlete.
Sure. Yeah, that's a wonderful question. I think there certainly is a lot of overlap between how these traits are kind of expressed. The challenge that I have seen is that oftentimes the identification of when these symptoms are present in the context of sport or athletes can be really challenging to identify. Because if you think about it, for example, you know, oftentimes kind of unbalanced exercise is a kind of a byproduct or a symptom of oftentimes eating disorders. Well, in the context of sport, first of all, there's just a lot of training, of course, I think entailed with a lot of athletes. But I think in addition to that, most of the time, at least in my experiences, athletes are really commended and reinforced and applauded for getting an extra workouts by their own teammates, by family, by coach. And so that can be really challenging, right? Like, is this a dedicated athlete or is this a disordered athlete? Mm-hmm. And so that's just maybe one example about the identification challenges in the context, you know, of sport. And so I think there's a lot of overlap. I do think that what can also be really challenging is we know that there's no such thing as like, quote unquote, just an eating disorder. There oftentimes, unfortunately, is co-occurring mood disturbances, mm-hmm, in terms of anxiety, depression, OCD, PTSD from trauma, and amongst others. I think sometimes athletes can be quite adept at somewhat compartmentalizing or not having really disadvantageous health implications or life circumstances impact sport performance. Sometimes it totally can, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think that sometimes, and I'm guilty of this too, is assigning health and wellness to athletes who are performing at a really high level. And sometimes that's absolutely true and spot on. They are, and I hate using the word healthy, but in the broad context would check those boxes. But something that I'm just struck on a daily basis in working with athletes is how incredibly resilient the human brain and body are. It's tremendous to me what the human brain and body can do in a state of malnourishment, of being medically unstable, of just being really compromised, right? And I think thinking about identification in the context of sport, if you're a sport provider, sport dietitian, whatnot too, that can be really challenging when you have these athletes performing really well who maybe aren't well in a variety of ways. Yeah.
Hey fans, I hope you are enjoying this conversation so far, and we'll be back to it in just a moment. But first, I want to pause and let you know that this episode is brought to you by the Female Athlete System of Transformation, aka the Fast Track to overcome disordered eating and use food as fuel to perform at your highest level. The Female Athlete System of Transformation is my unique program and proven systems to guide female athletes to understanding and implementing the proper nutrition for their sport, life, and health. Myself and my team of registered sports dietitians work one-on-one with clients to address their unique needs and counsel them through the nutritional and behavioral changes needed. Many female athletes who resonate with disordered eating, mental guilt around food and body, relative energy deficiency in sport or female athlete triad, amenorrhea, repeat injuries due to negligent nutrition, or frankly, just a lack of knowledge and understanding on their fueling needs, have seen incredible success in the Fast Track. After years of working as a sports RD, I've compiled the most effective ways for female athletes to learn nutrition, be supported, be challenged, and ultimately find their success with fueling as fast as possible. So don't wait another day. Get to your goals faster by joining the Female Athlete System of Transformation. Look in the show notes or head to the website to book a free call and learn more. Okay, now let's get you back to the conversation. Enjoy.
Yeah, and that's certainly something I hear a lot, whether it's with a client or somebody who's interested in becoming a client. Like, they say to me all the time, like, well, my doctor says I'm healthier, like all my blood work is good and I'm still performing great, you know? Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, let's not just like look at the paper and go down by down, line by line and check boxes. Let's have a discussion about how you're feeling.
Sure.
What is it like for you to sit down for lunch? You know, is that stressful or enjoyable? And, you know, it is certainly really difficult to draw that line of what is healthy and what is disordered. The exercise piece that you first touched on is also really, again, really difficult. And I think it also, I talked about this with my clients last night when we do a group call once a week, and we talked about our relationship with exercise, and we kind of talked about maybe different terms of like, what is exercise versus what is movement versus what is training? Sure. And those are some conversations we had so that we could, you know, just start viewing things differently a little bit. But I think another really interesting thing is just this overlap between the overlap and the, I'm losing my words, but just connection between eating disorders and, you know, exercise disorders. They could be two separate things, and yet they're also can be one and the same, or one fueling the other. I would say in your experience working with athletes, is there a lot of exercise dependency or exercise disorder going right alongside with that?
I would say yes. To overgeneralize, I mean, I don't think it's an overgeneralization, but I think that oftentimes is more common than not. Mm-hmm. I think it's really tricky because the training piece is a really key component for any athlete's like livelihood, sport performance, and that's unavoidable. But I also think kind of there's so many layers to examining your relationship with food, yes, but also like movement too. And it's kind of like, well, why am I doing this workout? Like, what is the purpose? Do I want to? This is an optional workout, or do I feel obliged to do it? Is there flexibility and freedom, or is this kind of like I'm struggling to have that in this regard of my life? Does life revolve around movement or exercise, or does exercise revolve around life? Mm-hmm. Right, and it really, I think that's an important question to try to, I think, kind of is illustrative of the place that exercise or training or movement kind of sits in your life. Do you revolve life around that, or you know, exercise around life? And I think that's an important piece too. So I think about things in terms of freedom or lack thereof, and really getting a rich understanding. And sometimes there's freedom in certain situations, right? Mm-hmm. With food or with even movement. And then other times that freedom is like non-existent, and it oftentimes operates from a place of fear. And I think with a lot of athletes we're working with, we try to work towards this place of security and trust. And I think in many domains in life, but unfortunately with athletes struggling with disordered eating or eating disorders, there is an orientation to engage with food, with movement in a place of distrust, insecurity, anxiety, fear. And that's a very different orientation in that engagement style.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, those emotions, the distrust, the fear, the anxiety that might be at the root of this is exactly where you come into play.
Sure.
As a psychologist and you know, working through those things.
Sure. But I would also say that dietitians play a key role in that as well, just through like various exposures, right? Like food exposures and otherwise. I think that really targets some of that fear that is so palpable in exposing oneself to, you know, foods maybe they, you know, limit or avoid altogether or whatnot too. So I think it's a collective team effort, of course, to kind of really target the fear. And it just maybe looks a little bit different pragmatically about how that's kind of addressed individually within each multidisciplinary treatment team member.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing that you mentioned when talking about like just kind of how athletes, that you know, risk of eating disorder, the prevalence of eating disorder in athletes and some of those traits, you mentioned, you know, how we can compartmentalize as well. And, you know, I just got me thinking about, yeah, athletes are good at compartmentalizing because it's like, wait, when I'm on the field, when I'm on the court, when it's race time, like I'm focusing on this one thing and drowning out the rest. And same thing with, you know, practice and certain things that I don't know that I really thought about that prior to this conversation per se, but our ability as athletes to focus in on one thing and compartmentalize, you know, and then maybe like push other things aside might also be a contributing factor to the development of an eating disorder as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the athletes that are perform at a high level consistently, I mean, they have a multitude of off the chart traits, obviously, but one of those I think can be the ability to, the focus and concentration in the present moment and staying in the present moment is really foundational and key, but also they have really good selective amnesia, meaning like they can forget a really poor game that they just had, a really rough day, you know, at home or otherwise, maybe early that morning. And they're able to really be present and engage in the current moment to kind of execute and engage in the demands of their sport. And mm-hmm. and that's hard to do, right? And we're not robotic, we're human beings, but there is a tendency where athletes, I think, exhibit that ability at a much greater capacity perhaps than maybe others. And that makes them quite proficient in sport, but can also kind of prolong getting help or having just even decrements kind of show to those around them that help is needed.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, I was just kind of reflecting on some of my clients too, and that focus and maybe, you know, drowning out the other stuff. I also see mm-hmm. that so often of like, okay, I'm hyper-focusing on this meal and over-stressing about this meal. And yet, like, there's other things in life that, you know, their attention is needed in. And in fact, sure. probably if they gave their attention to those other things in life, their life would feel more in control or something like that. Yeah. But they're so hyper-focused on this food or this meal or what they're eating for the day, they're not paying attention. And it's part of that, like that focus can be a positive trait. And yet we're focusing on some of the wrong things here.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, I think that's right on the money. And I do think there's unfortunately a tendency to be quite internally preoccupied by a lot, right? With these athletes that are struggling in this capacity, so that the ability to engage maybe in conversation with someone else socially with peers is really hindered because there's maybe perseverative thoughts or really interfering thoughts that really just dominate. So physically they're here, but headspace they're somewhere else or they're preoccupied. And so that really just renders kind of that lack of connection to just what you're doing in the moment, but also with others too, when these struggles arise.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've been touching on a little bit of just like some traits and reasons athletes may struggle with eating disorders. And this is the Female Athlete Nutrition Podcast. But so we talk about girls and women all the time, but we've got a mm-hmm. male guest. I would love to talk about eating disorders in men and in boys and males, because that's something we don't give much attention to on this podcast specifically, but deserves attention. Sure. Let me ask you what, you know, a silly question, but I just want to hear you say it. You know, are men at risk of eating disorders as well?
Yes, short answer. Absolutely. And I think everyone is. And I think with eating disorders, this illness doesn't discriminate in terms of gender, socioeconomic status, sport, and it's really transcends every, you know, across all lines and whatnot too. So I do think we've come a long way as a field in the sport world, eating disorder world, to just obviously just name and acknowledge that males are also at risk and struggle, and the identification has, I think, improved tremendously, but there's still a ways to go, I think, yeah. as we all know. What I oftentimes, and I'm always really trying to be careful to not to overgeneralize any subpopulation, because that's not, I think, fair or accurate. But I do find more common than not, there's, I don't know, just a lot, oftentimes kind of some more shame and maybe stigma that males have that maybe are struggling in these ways with eating, and the ability, the relatability to other peers or other men who have been struggling similarly is almost like lost on them. Like I've never known another guy to have these issues. And so that can feel really isolating and lonely too. And oftentimes that can result too in just delayed identification and treatment. So that oftentimes, unfortunately, kind of accompanies that as well.
You know, I agree with you. I think shame and stigma are two problems that just the identification, diagnosis, and treatment of eating disorders exists across the board for anybody. I think people who experience this experience a lot of shame,
sure,
you know, and experience a lot of loneliness at no matter what. And yet there is something that I think it maybe it's just because, I don't, these are generalized statements here, but maybe it is because women are generally tend to talk more or something like that, or talk to each other about their feelings and experiences a little bit more, that they at least know, hey, I do know somebody else who struggled with this, or I do know there's help for that. And maybe these conversations aren't happening so freely for the men or for the boys. And so I think there can be sometimes, I don't know, because that's not my lived experience, but sure. You know, from a clinician standpoint, I do see it does almost appear a little bit harder for the men to seek help. And then, like you said, even just that identification, because I would say right now, if we were to look up studies, we see that, oh, eating disorders are more prevalent in women, in girls, in females, in female athletes. But is that really true? I don't know if it's really true. I just haven't identified it.
Yeah, I think all the data suggests so. I do think, though, that I think what's challenging about eating disorders is that you'll have stats, and I think the prevalence rates are the best that we have right now, and I think they're close. I do think they're underrepresentative, though, of individuals struggling. I think about a lot of college athletes, and those working in college athletes know that there's like PPE exams, and they have at the beginning of the year, and they give a battery of tests, and they're assessing for a lot, like physically, psychologically, and whatnot, too. And there's 400, 500 student athletes at a school, and there's usually a questionnaire or two about like eating behaviors, right? And I don't know, athletes are pretty smart and adept and kind of like recognize, if I answer certain ways on these, I'll probably be flagged, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think because of that, like when it's anything self-report, sometimes it can be underrepresentative, but really.
Yeah.
So I think because of that, I always think there's more people struggling. And I think that the number of athletes struggling with disordered eating, I mean, is really vast, right? And I think that is important to remember, that no one wakes up one morning with an eating disorder and they didn't have one the day before. It usually is this like disordered eating pattern, of course, that really becomes more pronounced and interfering. And then, of course, kind of meets diagnostic criteria for an eating disorder at some point. But I think those suffering kind of with disordered eating, which is a lot of us, you know,
yeah,
and athletes and whatnot too, are really at risk, obviously. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up, because I agree, the spectrum of disordered eating, quite a spectrum. And I think a lot more people struggle with that than just an eating disorder per se. In fact, that I do have to say that's more my specialty, is the disordered eating, especially because I do work in virtual,
yep,
outpatient setting. You know, there's certain like things that just aren't like, you know, your work with ED care is, you know, has in-treatment, inpatient treatment options and things like that.
Sure.
But anyways, there's also this huge, population of athletes with disordered eating that aren't going to report, but that certainly still deserves attention, fixing, yeah, healing, help.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the huge population of people that maybe could be classified as an eating disorder, but have that mindset of, I'm not that bad, I'm not that sick, yeah, I'm not that person, right? And it's like, and so they're not reporting that because of that. I think just to say this for any athletes or college athletes that are listening is, you know, to go ahead and answer those questions honestly, you know, when you're meeting with your doctor or doing that physical participation exam questionnaire, because
It's there only to help you. It's not there to hold you back or to prematurely give you a diagnosis. I have an athlete client working with me right now that, you know, shared that with me of, oh, in the beginning of the year, I, you know, checked those boxes. And of course, they made me meet with all their people. And she's like, oh, it was so stressful. But then I was like, yeah, but that then led you to me. And you have the counselor at school now, and you have a doctor at school who's checking in on you. Like, it's all good things came from it. All good things came from it. So I just really want athletes to keep that in mind. It's not to hold you back. It's to help you, because the longer you let these issues continue, as you just said, nobody just wakes up one day, you know, with an eating disorder per se. It's, you know, things, you know, just continue. And so the more honest you can be, the sooner you could get help in a way that makes sure it doesn't turn into such a problem that then does hold you back.
Sure. And I think that I agree with all that. And I do think if you're a provider, I think I'm listening, I think it's important to remember that an unfortunate reality of this illness is oftentimes a lack of awareness about how compromised one is, but then also an accompanying lack of urgency. It's just a really sad reality and a scary one too. I think you would think objectively and subjectively, a lot of individuals struggling in this way are pretty compromised, even if that's just like psychologically or just like in terms of what you think about, what dominates your thoughts or how you spend your time or whatnot too. There, you know, and of course, like medically, hormonally as well, but I can't recall an athlete who's like banging down the doors, like, I got to get help now. It usually is a loved one, a parent, a sibling, a friend, a coach really saying, no, you need more support. It's maybe not wanted perhaps, but it's needed. And I think sometimes things can become pretty normalized and desensitized too, just because they've maybe been present for a prolonged period of time. And so that can really render someone kind of to experience a lack of urgency to get help and treatment in a targeted way.
Thanks to Inside Tracker, I can get insights and feedback on my blood biomarkers whenever I want to. No more waiting for doctor's visits and them telling you, you're fine. Instead, you are in control of your health with Inside Tracker. For 20% off any of their products, blood biomarker testing, DNA kit, interage, head to InsideTracker.com and use the code RISEUP. Take your health into your own hands. Health, wellness, and fitness coaches, listen up. Practice Better is the all-in-one platform that I use to manage my business and my clients. From client scheduling and messaging, hosting sessions, taking notes, creating modules, invoicing, telehealth, building reports, and more, Practice Better is the better way to manage your practice as a nutrition or health or fitness coach. Look no further. Use the link in our show notes and use the code RISEUP20 for 20% off your first 4 months plus a 14-day free trial. I've been using Practice Better since the inception of my business, Rise Up Nutrition, and I couldn't be happier. Again, the code is RISEUP20, all caps. Use the link in our show notes for 20% off your first 4 months and a 14-day free trial. Let's get back to the episode.
It's so interesting because, you know, if as an athlete you had some other sort of illness or injury,
sure,
you probably would, you know, if yeah. You know, suddenly you have, you know, a cold or a cough or a virus that's affecting your ability to participate in sport, you'd rush to the doctor and try and, you know, get medication or whatever it is you need because you're missing out on practice.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the more apparent physical injury, like, you know, you've got tendonitis in your elbow or you break your leg. It's like you rush to the doctor,
sure, yeah,
and to the orthopedic and to the physical therapist to heal as quickly as possible. So I think it, you know, it's hopefully people listening really listen to your words as you're saying, this is an illness.
Yeah.
You know, you've said that quite a few times now. This is an illness. So let's get treatment as soon as possible, just like you would any other illness.
That's a great point, and I'm glad you said that, Lindsay. And I think, yes, athletes are sometimes run to the training room if, you know, IT band fires up, a little twinge in their hammy, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, no. And they recognize the implications. If they don't address it, obviously is going to get more pronounced and persist. Yeah. What's really challenging when there is eating disorder present, oftentimes, sometimes it's immediate, oftentimes it's not. It's just delayed. and I, you know, I'm not eating enough or I'm under portioning and yeah, I feel fine. Like in practice, it wasn't like it was a train wreck. And so because of that, there just isn't this kind of immediacy that athletes have in seeking targeted care as, you know, physical injuries kind of pop up. But the implications and shoveling out of kind of such a notable when time has passed, it just prolongs like anything healing and the amount of time needed for that healing to occur. So like most physical ailments, timely targeted treatment is just vital.
Yeah, absolutely. Dr. Nichols, you are on a couple advisory councils and boards for National Eating Disorder Association, NEDA, which is a wonderful organization, and also ED Care, which is so ED, eating disorder care. That's in Colorado. Do they have more sites than that? Or is it just in Colorado?
Yes, they have Kansas City and Omaha as well. The EDGE program for athletes specifically is in their Colorado facility. Yeah, in Denver.
Okay, that's why I know the Colorado one so much more because, so the Colorado one has the athlete program. Yes. And you mentioned earlier working with the Victory program as well. So there are some treatment centers that are specific, you know, have specific programs for their athletes, be it a sports psychologist or a sports nutritionist. So that's really helpful. What are some things that, you know, that you do on these advisory boards? Just curious, you know, your role in them and the work that you do.
Yeah. So I'm honored and humbled to be on any board, obviously, but I realize I know very little in this world, but I feel privileged to have the very unique experiences that I've had work just being in the space to support athletes in the ways that I've been able to, and more specifically kind of with eating concerns, because that is just, it is a niche there that I've been able and love to be a part of. So I think with those experiences and most of my caseload is eating concerns with athletes and has been over the last 10 years or so in my private practice. I see athletes for a broad number of performance issues and mental health, but I think trying to best inform kind of like what I've experienced in intensive treatment and on outpatient world as well to just educate, whether it's providers, whether it's family members, whether it's sport personnel, because I think that's such a key piece, because I always operate that everyone's doing the best that they can. They have the best intentions, but I oftentimes think that without appropriate knowledge about what we're looking for and then what needs to happen or what happens if things aren't addressed, then really things can go sideways and actually be quite dangerous quickly, you know, for athletes that we're all trying to support as well. So part of these boards are trying to develop, whether it's resources, that's a big one too, to enhance education, trainings for sport providers, for eating disorder professionals, for athletes. And then it's trying to enhance kind of best practices in treatment as well. And we're learning a lot. And we will hopefully continue to do so collectively as a field, of course, and learn from each other and the research that's being published and out there too. But it's really trying to consolidate all this and deliver it in a way that's easy to digest and understand for all these different kind of populations and subgroups in the athlete world, in the provider world, parents, and whatnot as well.
Yeah. And I shared with you before we hit record, I was on one of your trainings last year. So, you know, you providing trainings to help educate other providers. And I got to, you know, sit on the other side. And so that was really helpful. Myself and the other dietitian on my team, Jenna, as well, we both were able to join. I've added two more dietitians on my team since then. So we'll be looking for more.
Right.
Looking for more training. Yes, absolutely. Yes. So can you tell us a bit more about your private practice? Again, you've years of experience, you've worked with different organizations and you're at this advisory board, but you do have your own practice, Mind Body Endurance. You do in-person, you do virtual services. And so these are all certainly can help as our conversation today has focused on eating disorders in athletes, but you're also, you know, at your core, a sports psychologist here. So could you share with us maybe a little bit about your psychology philosophy and some of the types of people that you help or services that you can provide?
Sure. Yeah. No, thanks for asking. I'm just really blessed to be with some wonderful people first and foremost and really skilled colleagues in terms of my private practice. It's interesting. It's have it in-person services here in St. Louis and then virtually as well in the world we're living, and that really opens up accessibility to care. And I think that's a wonderful thing. So we have five or six now sport dietitians kind of on board for performance nutrition concerns, eating concerns with athletes. And then with our mental health providers and sports psychologists, I think we have six as well. And then we're also bringing on a sports psychiatrist, which we're really important or excited about in the near future. With the licensing, that has really opened up kind of doors to, again, just accessibility of care. With our sports psychologists who are part of PsychPAC, we can provide care virtually for 35 states, those states that participate in PsychPAC, and then some other individual states as well. So yeah, we essentially just try to really fill needs. And sometimes that's interfacing with colleges too, and serving kind of maybe if they don't have an eating disorder specialist and whatnot too, we kind of try to serve that adjunctively or be referrals for colleges that maybe just aren't able to handle the demand and need for services, both nutritionally and then mental health services. We provide trainings. We have our eating disorder and sport conference virtually on July 21st. And there's six continuing education credits for CEs, for dietitians and mental health providers as well. And then, yeah, kind of give workshops or talks and then consult on policies, procedures if we're working with a national governing body or sport body and college athletic departments as well, in addition to providing kind of individual services for athletes across the country, both adults and adolescents as well. We certainly can't be a one-stop shop for everyone, but it is wonderful to kind of have somewhat of a multidisciplinary approach, I think, kind of in-house. And then we absolutely refer outside as well with trusted providers too. So if we don't know yet, we'd love to kind of speak with you just to be a resource that we can kind of also collaborate in the care of athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's nice when you can keep things in-house, but also to know when, something absolutely. Else is needed. Yes. And I actually, again, just learned something new that you can provide your services to 35 states, because that's something I've run into as a dietitian. And I have my network of psychologists that I might refer to, but I do work virtually with clients in so many different states, and there's all these licensing laws, and it gets very difficult. Yes. And like, I've got a great therapist in Colorado, but you live in Pennsylvania. Sure. You know, so it's very difficult to build that team that can, you know, just from the regulatory side of your credentials and some of these clinical cases that you're dealing with. So that's super helpful for me to know. I'm excited to know that now. So, super helpful conversation today, Riley. Thank you for all the work you do and for shedding some light to our listeners as well about the importance of treating eating disorders in athletes and the importance of treating our mental health and psychology as well. I have a few fun questions that we can wrap this up with.
Okay.
If there's one food you could eat every single day for the rest of your life and never get sick of it, what would it be?
Brownies.
Oh, so good.
Yes, that's a no-brainer. Yeah.
What's your favorite sport to participate in yourself?
Oh, is this present day?
Yeah.
Okay. I think running is just easy. It's accessible. It's kind of no frills. And I really like running. Yes.
Yeah. Love it.
Yep.
Okay, I'll give you one more question. What about in the past then?
In the past? It was baseball. That was kind of my passion for years and years. And then it was triathlon before being a dad and kind of having priority shift and time shift. I love the sport of triathlon and whatnot too. So,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And then becoming a dad, you had to take two-thirds of it out.
Sure. Yeah. What would be your answer to that question, the sport?
Oh, mine is running.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Growing up, my main sport and love was gymnastics, but which I now love as a spectator. But running brings me joy and I love competing in it too. You know, I would not enjoy getting back up on a balance beam right now. it would be very stressful. but running, I like to try to compete still. So yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. So how about as another fun question is your favorite sport to watch and spectate?
Baseball, no doubt. Yes.
Yep. Awesome.
Yes. I think that'll always be there. I don't have maybe the time to watch as many live games, but when that time comes, I would gladly welcome it. So yes.
Yeah. All right. And then final question, if there's a female athlete out there that you want to give a shout out to for being a role model and inspiration for any reason, somebody in your personal life or professionally well-known, who would that be and why?
Oh my gosh, that's so hard to choose. I would actually say, and this is really the truth, it would be my wife. She was diagnosed with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis when she was young and really limited kind of just mobility in general when she was younger. And doctors at the time didn't think she would really be able to be mobile really at all. And so I have really admired her ability to kind of persist and persevere just with some of those challenges throughout life. And she's really able to live a wonderful, flourishing, functioning life. She's one heck of an athlete. She would never describe herself as that. I had the opportunity to do a couple of races with her, and she's a stud, but very just like understated, humble, just likes to have fun. So yeah. I think just the way that she views kind of moving and I think wouldn't call herself an athlete would be my choice. If we're thinking more broadly, probably Kara Goucher, Lexi Pappas would probably be more recent, just in being more vocal in terms of platform that they have to use that to really speak into some of these areas that have been so powerful. Yeah. And I know there's a lot of other athletes too that have used their platform in a way for the good for a thousand reasons. But I just hear so many of my athletes speak, and their words have really resonated with a lot of the athletes that I work with, amongst many other female athletes. But those were just a few top of mind.
Yeah, great. Kara and Alexa is great athletes, and like you said, with their platforms, and they both have books that are really inspiring.
Sure.
But I love the shout out to your wife, and even I think it's also a great, not only in her ability to overcome adversity, but like a great testament to the fact that she's not even somebody who maybe resonates with being an athlete, but like she is, she's, sure. You know, and I think that's, you know, something that so many athletes, going back to the psychology piece and identity and stuff like that, it's like, you know, you, other people might be viewing you as a stud and a star athlete and find you an inspiration, even if you're not necessarily viewing yourself as that. And
completely.
Yeah, I love that. So shout out to your wife. Well, thank you so much again. This was wonderful.
Thanks so much for having me and for giving some airtime to these important topics. So thanks so much.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie. Please go check them out, and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action. Head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide. Or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new coaches toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.